This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And I'm so happy to have you with us today. So when was the last time you said, I don't trust that person, or I don't trust the situation? Now think about how often you find yourself doubting, not trusting. Every day, is it one time a week, every time you embark on something new? When you first meet someone, is your first instinct not to trust? Well, you're not alone. Enter Leslie Green. She's our new EWN Radio Network host of Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust, which is also the title of her book. She is a trust specialist, and she's been writing about trust on her biweekly blog, Trust Life Today, since 2011. So welcome, Leslie.
Thank you, Phyllis.
So, Leslie, trust is a really tough thing because it's so intangible. I mean, it's sort of like that gut feeling that we talk about, you know. But before we even go into trust, I do want to I'm going to turn the concept of trust on its ear and hopefully get you all on the fast track to trusting. As difficult as that might be, and you might be saying to yourself, never, I'm just not a trusting person. But we're going to try to help you at least take that one little toe in the water and today and see if you can, just open your mind. So, Leslie, but first, before we even go into that, I just want to say my condolences on the loss of your brother. Mm-hmm. I know that must have been a hard thing for you. So
thanks, Phyllis. Yeah. It's still very recent and new, and I appreciate your condolences. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's never easy, and I know he was ill, but it doesn't matter. It's especially for you as a sister and your mother. I'm sure you're going through a tough time, and we're going to kind of come back to that and talk about what you experienced there and how trust played a part in that experience. But first, you know, so many of us were raised and raise our kids to believe that trust is earned. But you say that's not so. Why is that?
Well, first of all, we kind of have to understand a little bit of the history of trust, which is that no matter what gender, no matter what culture you were raised in or what country you came from, we all do learn how to trust or, more importantly, how to distrust as children. So that's just one common thing that we all have around trust, is that it starts in childhood. And so often we are taught indirectly that you must earn trust. And a lot of times it's just from very simple and innocent behaviors. I could be standing at a playground waiting to get on the swing, and my mom is standing next to me, and she sees a man who could be a very nice man, benign, you know, whatever. He walks a little too close, and maybe he gives a funny vibe or look or something, and now my mom is telling me to inch a little closer and to not go next to strangers, and of course that's, she wants to protect me. But the message that I get as a child is one that's going to keep me safe, so I actually am thankful that she does that. But I also receive another message from her at the same time, and it's that people who look like him or that behave like he was behaving or something gets stuck in my subconscious, and I get enough of these messages over and over throughout my childhood growing up, and all of a sudden I'm not so trusting of someone else and feel that I have to then go back and earn trust. It's a very complicated thing because nobody sits us down and teaches us how to trust. We learn it just through observation, and a lot of times those patterns are hard to correct as we get older.
Don't you think, too, though, I mean, there's philosophy that, you know, you're born not to be trusted. You're born a sinner. And then there's some that say, right? And then there's some that say you are, we're going to trust you from the get-go and give you enough rope to hang yourself.
I see where you're going with that. Actually, we have to take it back before that, though. So it actually starts in infancy, and we start to learn to trust with our five senses. So my example just a moment ago of the playground, go back before then. This is when you're an infant, you're a newborn, and you cry. Your mother hears your cry, and depending on which cry, she will start to know which cry you're using, whether it's your hunger cry, you need to be changed cry. She starts to hone in on that, and you actually trust that when you cry, someone will respond to you. You also begin, so that's your auditory trust or your auditory sense. You also have, you're learning through your sense of smell. When you smell your mother's skin, you know you're about to be breastfed. Of course, you don't know these things consciously, but those are the senses that we start to have as infants. So it starts that early. Now, the other thing that happens, which is worth talking about, is we've got our thalamus that's located in the midbrain there. One of the things that happens also as infants is if we are not cuddled and we're not physically touched, we don't release something that's called oxytocin, and that oxytocin gets released right into our bloodstream. And if we're not having that released, and it is released with touch, so it's also released during breastfeeding, I think it's a commonly known fact, oxytocin is released during orgasm. So during all of these different touch points here, it's being released. So if you weren't touched very much as an infant, the what people say is the bad news is that you didn't have that flood of oxytocin, and those neurons didn't fire in such a way that later it is quite common that you are untrusting. But can I say the good news too, Phyllis? Can I share with them what the good news is? The good news is here is if you were a child and an infant who was raised this way, who didn't have a lot of touch, and you think, bummer, I'm never going to be able to trust because I didn't have those neural connections. The great thing, even though we may not be able to rewrite your story, we can rewire your brain.
Right.
And by rewiring your brain, I mean, everybody's heard that word, that plasticity. Our brains are very plastic. It's the whole malleability of the brain. And there are tools and techniques that can be learned so that you are able to rewire your brain, and trusting is possible for each and every one of us.
Yeah, and that rewiring, I think that kind of comes into play where I say that there are some, the way sometimes people are looking, it could be different religions, things like that. I'm not judging, but this is something that people are taught, that you're born, you know, you're born a sinner, and now, you know, in other words, you're born not to be trusted. And that's, you know, that's one area. And so what you're saying, though, is if you're taught that day in and day out, it still can be rewired. But I imagine that's a really difficult task, but not impossible, is what you're saying.
It's not impossible, and it may actually be easier than you think. And so I think I went in two different directions, because you actually were asking more about religion and what people kind of tell us as we're growing up. And I apologize, I took it kind of a step underneath that, took it back to infancy. So let's actually go back to your original question, which was if you were told these things growing up and you have grown up believing, you know, that you have to be worthy, that you have to earn trust, that if you don't do this, you know, you're born a sinner. So where we would take that then as an adult is I think we would need to understand this is how our thoughts become beliefs, and understanding the difference between what I think versus what I believe. So you might have the belief system because you've been told, you know, 200 times that you were born a sinner, and you have to do X, Y, and Z in order to, you know, get into heaven or to be trusted or whatever it is that you know, next step is. So from there, that is your belief system, and your belief system actually happens at a subconscious level. And so That's the tricky part here, because a lot of times when we talk about beliefs, they're out of sight, out of mind. I mean, they very much fit that cliche. However, it's actually ironic because they're deeply embedded in our minds, and we can access them. And the way we access them is we consciously think a thought. And once we think that thought so many times in a row, that thought then becomes a belief. And I'll give you a very quick example. So when you were younger and you were learning how to drive, you had to think about, now I put my seatbelt on, I check my rearview mirror, I check my side view mirror, my blinkers. You're thinking of all those things, and you may even have written down steps on how to get from point A to point B. Now you jump in your car, and without even thinking, you're applying lipstick, you're talking on your cell phone, you're doing all the things that you're doing while you subconsciously are putting on your seatbelt, checking your mirrors, making sure that you're being safe and all that. And so those thoughts then that you used to think on a conscious level became this belief. You know how to drive. It's not something that you need to pay. I mean, we still need to pay attention to it, but it's not something that you need to give quite the conscious attention to that you did before. So that's an easy example of seeing how thoughts can become beliefs, the difference between conscious versus subconscious. And we can train our brains to believe what we want them to believe.
You, and I imagine you first have to go back and you have to look at that and see what is it, how does it make you feel, and how does it make you feel about yourself, that belief. What does that, and is it causing, putting you sort of in a state of anxiety and worry and guilt? And I guess in order, you have to first accept that what you're thinking and what your belief is isn't working for you, and that it's causing you to worry and be distrustful. And knowing that, you, and I guess the only way to know that is to see, well, how is it working for you? How are the results? You know, what are the results? Are you in good relationships or are you bad relationships? You know, you have to sort of see, and you kind of have to look at it that way to see if the beliefs are working for you. But I want to go back to even something really sort of more fundamental about a conversation. So why is trust important?
Trust is important. I think there are three truths of trust, and these truths of trust get to the bottom line of why it's important. The main reason I believe that trust is important is because it brings us peace. That is the foundation and the basis underneath why we trust. And a lot of focus groups that I've held in the years, and a lot of times when I talk to people, they say, no, Leslie, I don't think that, you know, as humans, it's peace that we want more than anything else. I really just want to feel love, or I want to feel happiness. Or a good question is when you ask somebody, what do you want for your children, Phyllis, more than anything in the world? Most people will say, oh, I want them to feel loved, and I want them
to be happy.
Feel happiness. Right, yeah. Those are the two things. But I would ask people, how often are you able to give love? And more importantly, how often are you able to receive love if you don't feel peacefulness underneath that? It's very difficult for me to feel loving when I am agitated underneath or anxious underneath. I need that peace. Now, I say the same thing about happiness. It is very difficult for me to feel happy if I don't have this foundation of peace underneath. So even without going into the other two truths of trust, that to me is the simple answer to your question. Why is it important to trust? It's important to trust so that we can feel at peace deep within ourselves.
You say that trust also begins with ourselves, not with other people. So go ahead.
That, I would say, is the first truth of trust. That is the foundation, and oftentimes I refer to it as the secret of trust, because people think that we should trust other people when really The trust begins within us. If I don't put it within myself first, I'm actually giving my power away. As soon as I don't trust myself and I say, oh, it's because Phyllis did this to me or it's because Susan did this to me, I have then placed myself as the victim and I have made all of my power be external to me. That my worthiness depends, and I think, you know, you are a big one to talk about worthiness. I love that. The whole worthiness piece, if I am always putting it external to me, then I'm not claiming my worthiness. I'm not claiming my power, and that's why I believe that trust is an internal thing. It begins within me first, and then it's up to me to decide, am I going to trust this person or not. They didn't take anything away from me, though.
Right. Now, Leslie, we have to take a short break, but coming up, we're going to find out what happened to you, Leslie Green, that put your own trust on the line. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Janelle McCauley, the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, right here on the EWN Radio Network. Join me every Thursday to find out how you can take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the food you love. Each week, I'll bring you powerful and revealing interviews with doctors, health experts, and people just like you who have learned to create a healthy future for themselves and the ones they love. I look forward to serving you great content and healthy tips on Eat Great, Live Well Radio. And remember, if you can't listen to me live, you can always get the replay at EWNRadioNetwork.com. I invite you to join me each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, here on the EWN Radio Network, and let's create your healthy future together.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And yes, welcome back to Close Up. I'm speaking with a really incredible woman. Her name is Leslie Green. And Leslie is, among other things, one of our new EWN Radio Network hosts of her show is called Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. And I guess, you know, Leslie, you're a trust expert is what you are. And you've had some experiences yourself, but let's just get into a little bit more about you. You started writing about trust in your blog in 2011. What was it that got you interested in trust?
Well, Phyllis, I'd say that it was 1998 actually, and I found myself 3 months pregnant with our older son. And at the same time, my dad died. And so I think it was the juxtaposition of those two events, this life growing inside me that I knew I was going to love each and every day of my life, and then the loss of a life whom I had loved each and every day of my life. And I think those two things happening at the same time, it forced me to start to ask life's big questions. You know, the ones, why are we here? Why do we exist? I mean, these are the questions that a lot of us, when we become still enough and stop running around and checking our email and doing all these other things, when we become still and quiet, these are the big questions that we all ask ourselves. And so here I was asking myself these questions, and whether the book that I was reading or the course I was taking, whatever it was named, sometimes it was forgiveness, surrender, letting go. No matter what, you know, it said is the title, underneath each one, I noticed that all paths led back to trust. And so I started studying more about trust at that point, around 98, 99, and then, which was a really good thing, not good, it was a really wonderful thing that I started studying about it, because 6 months later, when I delivered our older son, he was born literally a blue baby, blue as a blueberry, lack of oxygen to the brain. He was rushed off to the NICU, and that was just the first of many things that happened to him over the years. We have an endocrine, or he has an endocrinologist, an ophthalmologist, a, neurologist, at one point a cardiologist. At one point he was 9 years old and we were going up in an elevator and he asked me, "Mommy, do all kids have this many ologists?"
Aww.
And I was like, "No." And this one we were going to see was actually an ENT. I had a sneaky suspicion at that time, Phyllis, that my son was reading my lips. I had a feeling he was going deaf, which he was.
Oh,
and
my
so
goodness.
Enter the audiologist who works for the ENT, which led us to the nephrologist, which is a kidney doctor, to find out that he had a rare kidney disease. Now, all of this isn't happening overnight. He'll be 16 next month. This is all happening over the course of his life. And so I was so, I can't even say happy, I was so blessed and fortunate to have a practice of trust and an understanding of trust in my life, to know that I was able to let go and I didn't need to try to control so many aspects of his well-being. Otherwise, it was driving me nuts as a mother to try to control so much of his medical care, down to his sleep and his diet. I was trying to control those things as well. And quite honestly, the only thing I was doing was becoming more obsessed, until I relied on my practice of trust to give me that peace, have me be grounded, and to start to be able to deal with everything that we were having to face each and every day. Because let's be honest, Phyllis, we all are going to have struggles in life. We all are. It's just a matter of, do I choose to go through them at this frenetic pace where I'm, you know, an insomniac and I'm, you know, just, it's detrimental to my own health? Or do I choose to go through it in a more conscious way where I am trusting in the outcome and I have tools and strategies at my disposal that I can use that I can actually get through this day by day in a more peaceful, serene way so that I'm more present, not just to understand what the doctors are telling me, but more present for my son, for my husband, for my younger son, and, you know, for myself.
So, Leslie, what was it then about your experience with your son that led you to be writing and learn, wanting to know everything there is about trust?
Okay. So in seeing how I was so obsessed about controlling every facet of his life, what I found, Phyllis, was the more I tried to control, the more I just was driving myself crazy and everybody around me, until it dawned on me one day, you know what, for the past, I don't know how many years, over a decade, you've been studying trust, you write about trust, you coach on trust now, but you're not listening to your own advice and you're not actually making it be a daily practice. And so it was because I think we default when we're in stress mode and anxiety mode, we default to previous behaviors, which are, I'm going to control this, I'm going to make sure that my son doesn't suffer, I'm going to do whatever is possible. And so that was my default. It wasn't until I said, you know what, I've got tools, I've got strategies, I know how to trust, why am I not applying these as soon, and I do mean as soon as I started to apply all of my learnings and teachings over the years, I immediately found peace, which then told me, if I can do it, why wouldn't I want to share this with others? And that's initially why I started my blog in January of 2011, was to share a message with others on, you can do it too. It is possible. It's achievable. And we can put this into our bodies in a way where we don't have to go through life at such a frenetic pace, you know, driving ourselves crazy and everybody else around us.
Well, because if you didn't find peace, I mean, obviously there was something in you. I'm even getting on a deeper level here. You yearned for peace. And if,
yeah.
Because what if you didn't find that peace? You realize there was a connection between trust and peace, but you desperately wanted to find peace, and somehow you made that connection to just trust what is. What would have happened if you didn't? What was it? What would have happened to you? What kind of person were you becoming in a way, in dealing with all the issues with your son?
the easiest answer that just screams out is I had been suffering from insomnia for 20 plus years. That's a long time to have poor sleep. And not that it was every single night, but the more I tried to control and the less I trusted, the worse my insomnia got. And so you're functioning on little sleep, which means you have very low patience. You're snippy with everybody. I wasn't able to function at work. It starts to take a toll on you at a cellular level as well. I was starting to get ill. I mean, there's so many different things that impact when we take our bodies and we have one little fraction going here and one fraction there. We're not whole anymore, and I wanted to feel whole, which is what peace brings to me, is that feeling that I can breathe deep down in my abdomen, not up here in my chest where it's fight or flight all the time, fight or flight, I've got to do, I've got to create, I've got to fix, and that all screams I've got to control. So it's the letting go of control and entrusting that is what led me to peace.
It's funny because when we think of fight or flight, it's just our instinct, our innate human animalistic instinct in terms of surviving. But really, really what you're saying is you, in order for you to survive, you had to let go. You had to surrender. And we're going to go into that in a minute. But then at the age of 40, so you're going through this with your son. Boy, it's the hardest thing when your child is struggling, and just that alone is just so difficult. But then at the age of 40, you get the news. You get the news that you have breast cancer. So at this point, you've been writing about trust. You've been through this with your son. So how did your trust now come into play when you found out on your first mammogram at the age of 40 that you had cancer?
It was huge, Phyllis. It was huge in a very peaceful way. I was actually able to not just, I mean, it was huge for myself that I could go through something that monumental and have it not be this horrible experience. And I say that very much honoring everybody else's experience, because I don't want to make it sound like it was a Pollyanna experience and breast cancer was fun and yippee, because it wasn't. But, you know, it also wasn't horrible, terrible. Because I had practiced so many years with letting go of different medical issues that were happening with my son, I was able to very much go through an entire cancer journey and everything that looked like, with its multiple surgeries and recovery and all of that. I was able to go through it relatively peaceful, and that is a relative term there. But had I not had that practice already in place, I wouldn't have been able to exhibit those behaviors within myself, and I also would not have been able to exhibit what that looked like to my son, who, I'll just say, in the future will have a multiple instances of kidney transplants. And I really thought that it was extremely important for him to see his mother go from being the strong person he saw her to being right next to my hospital bed and seeing how I could barely talk. I was that weak. And everybody's cancer experience is a little different, so I don't want to scare anybody by saying that, because you could come out of surgery and be extremely fine. My circumstance, though, wasn't that. I was very weak. And he's the son that I asked, once I got released from the hospital and came home, he's the son who helped me, you know, walk me to the bathroom. I wanted him to see me at my most frail, so that he could then, over the following year, 2 years, see mommy build up to be that strong person again. Because he's going to be able to do the very same thing. So they were very conscious decisions on my part, and hopefully at a subconscious level, he took a lot of that in and he'll remember a lot of it.
You were, in our first segment, you were talking about there's three components to trust. One is peace, that is the probably the biggest piece is part of trust. We have trust. When we feel trust, we feel at peace. But there's also the second component. You call it trust's cousin, and surrendering. So surrender. So tell us about that.
I'm sorry, Phyllis, you cut out. You said it cut out on my end. It said there was a second component.
You said that there were three. You were talking about, and peace was the first one. There is a second component. Mm-hmm. And what would that be?
Yes, so trust is the foundation of all relationships, which is another reason why it's so important to trust. So it's important for peace, but it's also important to build strong and healthy relationships, because whether it is with my doctor, my attorney, my auto mechanic, it doesn't matter, my spouse, it really doesn't matter the level of significance that this person has in my life. In order for us to build a healthy relationship and a strong relationship, we need to be able to trust each other. And so that goes to a business relationship and a professional relationship as well. So that's another huge second component of trust, is that it's the foundation for all relationships, be them personal or professional.
And what would be the third?
The third component is what I call the truth of trust, the main truth of trust, which is that it begins within us first. Those are the three truths. With those three things, and once we understand that there are tools and strategies and techniques behind getting to each one of those and actually believing them and having them work for us, once we're able to get there, then it just becomes a matter of having it be a daily practice. It's not necessarily this thing that you master and you go, okay, I checked that box, and you know, I'm all good at trusting now. I'm the trust master. It's really more of a daily practice, just like a yoga practice, meditation practice.
All right, and we're going to get into that in the next segment. But I do want to ask you about this. You had an experience in Acapulco with a friend. You were walking on the beach. You were unaware. You were talking, chatting. Who doesn't do this? Get completely engulfed in their BF, and suddenly the tide rose and both of you were swept out to sea. And you almost drowned. I mean, and so did your friend. But what was it in that experience with that undertow pulling you under, you know, throwing you around like a rag doll, as you described it in your book? Something happened to you, and this is what you call one of trust's cousins. That helped you overcome this.
Oh, you did an excellent job setting that up, Phyllis, because the cousin is surrender. I'll just say that. Trust's cousin is surrender. And the reason I say you did an excellent job setting that up, I'd have a hard time telling that story. I get a lot of anxiety when I tell the story, because to be caught in an undertow and slammed up against the rocks the way that my body was, and having to do to this day the most shocking thing I have ever done, which was I gave up. And in my giving up, I said a prayer, and it was a prayer of surrender. And I said, please forgive me. I was praying to a being, a God, an energy, and I was saying, please forgive me for giving up, but I didn't have any fight left in me. I quite literally could not stand up on my own two feet. And the instant that I gave up and I surrendered, a man came and scooped me up out of the water and ran and deposited me on the sand in a safe place, a man who no one else on the beach saw. And so that's a whole different story for a different day. Was it an angel? Was it a man? Who knows? But I was scooped up and taken to safety. But it wasn't until the moment I surrendered.
And you said you woke up and there were people surrounding you and you were looking for this. It was like you just had to kind of get your bearings, and then you realized your friend wasn't with you and you were screaming, and somehow you managed for them to get a boat out to her and rescued her. So surrender then... The idea is again, it kind of goes along with when you were talking about your son and dealing with all of the issues and the poor thing has to go through and more to go through. You having cancer, it sounds like surrender is this huge component where, like, it's just a letting go. You have to surrender to what? When you say surrender, what are you surrendering to?
You're actually surrendering to, you can take it in two different paths here. You're surrendering to a higher being, which goes to when people say, what's the difference between trust and faith? I have trust in myself because I have faith in a higher being, whatever you choose to call that being. That's one part of it. But the other part is that it's the what is. So in the letting go, defining what is. What is, every morning when I wake up, one of the first what is that I tell myself is, my son is healthy today. That's what is. Now, what if he does this? What if his kidneys begin to go into failure? What if? Okay, now what ifs only live in my mind. So I have to quiet the what ifs and start with the what is. What is, today my son is healthy. And so knowing that coupled with a faith and a trust, those are the things that I am surrendering to.
It's so interesting. You know, my mom, she's been married to my dad this year 60 years. And as we age, you know, unfortunately, you know, your son is young and he's had to suffer a great deal in physical health, but he's got a wonderful mother. You know, you're there by his side and he's learning about love and trust and surrendering. But you take somebody, I think my mother, for example, and I could be this way too. You know, maybe I'm raised into it. My mom is a terrible worrier and my dad has had seizures, and she, when he's not having a seizure, I'll say, how is he? The medication is working. Thank God he's okay. But there's always, I know, in the back of her mind, but what if he could have another seizure at some point? And there's always this worry that just gets in the, it seems to sort of interrupt that moment of, say, peace that she has, that everything's okay. She never surrenders to the what is, and it can be so, and she adores, loves my father. My mother is filled with love, but the trust part in terms of allowing the control, letting go of the control, is very difficult, because in her mind, you know, if you know her, the next thing for her, especially at their age, 81 82, you know, the next step could be death. And it's that the idea of, we can't control death. We can't control whether or not there's another seizure. But when you, I think, and I'm witness to this, when you stop living life in a way and living, I mean, they might be going to the movies and might be doing this, but it's always in the back of her mind. And the same thing, not so much with my dad, but more with her. It's so difficult when you don't surrender, when you try to have complete control, and there's just some things we can't have control over.
Well, that's the whole point of surrendering and letting go, is coming to the conclusion that there are very few things in life, Phyllis, that we can control. And once we actually make peace with that, a lot of wonderful things happen. Because really, when you think about what do we really control, we control the choices that we make. And I would like to make choices that lead to peace, and so that's why I trust. But those who are not completely on board with that, actually, I have a set of things that I usually, when I'm coaching people, that I just share with you here as kind of a freebie if anybody cares to know about control a little bit more. Once you're actually able to let go of control, you're able to set aside your worry. You're able to accept what is. And this is a biggie, because people have a hard time with this. You're able to pray with no attachment to the outcome.
Mm.
That's a huge one. You relish in knowing that you're not alone, because as soon as you surrender to the fact that you're not in control, you know, I'm not alone, not in my worries, not in my joys, not in my sorrows, not in any of it, because there is this other being that dwells within me as me, and that allows you to surrender and let go.
Mm. Wow. We can go on forever. There's so much to talk about in relation to this, but there is one other cousin to trust that you say played a really important part in allowing us, helping us to surrender and ultimately to trust and to find peace, and that is patience. So how does patience play into this? Into the equation.
Patience, that's in our very human nature, many of us are very impatient, especially when we get everything so quickly at our fingertips with text messaging and ordering pizzas. And I mean, my dry cleaner even comes to my house to pick up the clothes. I don't even have to drive them anywhere. So patience is something that we're not actually forced to practice very often. However, if we can go into a mindful practice where we are practicing patience, it does us a world of good, because I think that when things come to us so fast, we almost then start to shift our think system into a belief system that we're entitled to have everything happen so fast and at our fingertips, and this is what I want, and why can't I get it? And if I prayed for it, why didn't I get it?
Yeah.
And that's not really, it goes back again to the letting go and the surrendering. And the one thing that we really haven't talked about is that there is a foundation of trust that has to be built. And a lot of people don't want to hear this, but the foundation behind or underneath trust is the understanding and belief that everything does happen for a reason. So instead of when your mother is faced with something, or if a listener is being faced with something, instead of asking themselves, why is this happening to me? Why does this always happen to me? Change that to into the word for. Even if it's painful and even if it's hard to look at, why is this happening for me? It may hurt really badly right now, but is it for my spiritual growth? Is it for to prepare me for something later? If I said, why was breast cancer happening to me versus for me, I needed to be the patient. I needed to feel what it felt to be humbled and to be vulnerable. So it was happening for me so that I could know what it felt like to feel vulnerable, so that I could have true empathy when my son needs it. And it also happened for me so that I could model for my son. So nothing happened to me. It happened for me. So that simple, take the two, turn it into a four, that's huge as a foundation and a belief system, that everything happens for a purpose.
Amazing. It's so true. You had also talked a little bit earlier, you were talking about every day it needs to be a daily practice. So what are some ideas that you can give to people every day to set themselves on the road to trust every single day and make it a daily practice, so that when things do come up, difficulties, issues, it could be as simple as you know, being in rush hour traffic, to losing a loved one. You recently saw your brother just passed away, and I know that was very difficult, and probably very difficult for your mother. No mother ever wants to see their child go before them, no matter how old they are. So what daily practice would you recommend just today for people right away, as soon as our conversation is over? What is something that they can start right away to get into their daily practice of trust?
Okay, well, we'll take a very easy example, one that we all deal with that you mentioned, which is traffic. Instead of saying to yourself, why is this happening to me? Why am I stuck here? Think about, really what is happening. What is you're probably comfortable. I'm guessing you have air conditioning or heater in your car. You can turn on some good music. You can be alone with your thoughts for a moment. Turning it into a what is that you don't have add-ons. So the add-ons that we kind of screw ourselves up with is when we add the fear on, the anxiety, the worry, the doubt, the shame, the guilt. We could go on and on with what we add on to our what is. But just really looking at the facts of this is what is. I'm stuck in my car. I mean, is there anything that I can do to control it? Not really. Then let's just sit with it. Otherwise, you are actually making the choice to create more angst inside your own body. And that seems nuts, but we do it every day. So
right.
I'd say really getting clear on a what is versus a what if, and becoming very clear on once you hear your inner voice start to say, why is this happening to me, or why is anything happening to someone else? Just turn it around and start to look at, why is it happening for me? And those two things work really well hand in hand, but it takes a daily practice of practicing both of those things before you grow that muscle, and it starts to become a lot more automatic, and eventually it will actually become easy. Just keeping in mind that some days are easier than others. It doesn't mean that today I'm at 50%, tomorrow 60%, and eventually I get to 100%. That's not necessarily, it's every day is a little different. And some days I am great at trust, Phyllis. And other days, maybe I'm sleep deprived, maybe I'm catching a cold, maybe I had five things hit all at once. I'm not so patient and I'm not so trusting. But it's just taking that second to hit the reset button and then go right back into my practice.
And I think it's also, wouldn't you think too, that it's really just being aware. It's like,
because
we could get all wrapped up in all of that. And, but if like what you just said, you know enough, you've trained your muscle enough that you know when you're not being trusting. It's actually you're conscious of it, or you're trying to control a situation. You're aware of it. Some people just are in that, and then they just will live the angst. They'll live the impatience. They won't surrender. They go through that when in fact they could turn it around and do something different. Is there something that people can do before all that happens, before they run into traffic, before their spouse or, you know, their partner or their child tests their patience? Is there something that we can do every day before that happens to set our mind straight? And one thing you said that's really important, people often, I hear them say, oh, I prayed for this to happen. But you made it very clear that we never want to pray for the outcome. We want to be in the moment and surrender to the moment. So what can we do when we first wake up in the morning before all that, what hits the fan, so that we can be trusting and we can be at peace and we can have patience and we can surrender?
I would say the first thing that you can do in the morning is take some very clearing, deep breaths. Instead of grabbing your phone and seeing who's texted you overnight or going straight to the little icon that looks like a letter to check your email, just take a few moments to be. And I know a lot of people focus a lot on gratitude in the morning. That's huge. The very first thing is to think about one thing that you're grateful for, and normally that's my what is. What is, I am healthy and whole. What is, my son is healthy and whole. And then the other really simple thing to do that I would encourage everyone to do is when you start to feel that first tinge of stress or anger, that you pause long enough to take one deep breath in and out. And while you're taking that deep breath, you have allowed a gap to occur. And within that gap, that's where you're able to inject your consciousness and your intention. So as you breathe in and as you breathe out, you've created a gap. And right there, insert your what is, insert your intention. Even if you don't want to think, insert a feeling of calmness, and that will help. It's tremendous. It's one simple thing that we often forget to do. We go straight to react, boom, you know, lashing out with the email or whatever, and just taking that one moment to breathe, create the gap, and inject into it our consciousness.
Beautiful. Leslie, we have to go. I could really seriously talk to you all day about this. Such important stuff. Trust. It's so important for every part of your life. Trust yourself first. And once you do that, you can trust others. You can trust your situation. And as Leslie said, take a breath. And one breath can make a difference. It make all the difference in the world. So, Leslie, thank you. Again, her show is called Trust, Love, Trust, I'm sorry, Love, Trust, Love, Trust and Pixie Dust. And it's on live on Wednesdays. At 12 noon Eastern time. You can catch her there. If you miss it live, then you can always catch her. Listen to the recording, the podcast at EWNRadioNetwork.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Leslie, and look forward to listening to your show.
Thanks, Phyllis. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Close Up with your host, Phyllis Smith.